from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum in our opening hour this morning, the inability to pay court fees and fines for traffic violations has resulted in approximately 4 million license suspensions in the state of California. These suspensions often make getting to work more difficult for the state's poorest residents, which in turn makes repaying fines even harder. We'll discuss a new report by legal and civil rights groups which found traffic courts and fees disproportionately have impact on the state's most vulnerable populations. Forum is next after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. Legal and civil rights groups have found that traffic courts and fees have profound impact on the poor in California. Just yesterday, the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights of the San Francisco Bay Area released a report titled Not Just the Ferguson Problem, all about how high traffic fines and license suspensions disproportionately hurt California's poor and minorities, and how courts throughout the state provide limited due process and actually create dramatically economic inequality. That report, by the way, is on our website, kqed.org. According to the report, there are over 4 million Californians with suspended driver's licenses solely because they have not paid for minor infractions. The state presently has over $10 billion in uncollected court-ordered debt. And in this morning's opening Forum Hour, we explore the scope of the problem and the impact it has had and continues to have on the poor, and we'll also look at what can be done. Joining us in studio is Meredith Desitel. She's a staff attorney with the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights of the San Francisco Bay Area and lead author on the report, Not Just the Ferguson Problem, How Traffic Courts Drive Inequality in California. Welcome to the program. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you. Also glad to have Karen Martin, who is in upstate New York this morning. She's assistant professor of public management at John Jay College of Criminal Justice. Welcome, Karen Martin.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Glad to have you, and also glad to have Judge Deborah Ryan, who is with us this morning from San Jose. She's a judge in the Santa Clara County Superior Court, and welcome, Judge Ryan.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Good to have you, and let me begin with Meredith Desitel, who, as I said, is here with us in studio, and the report says it's chillingly similar here to Ferguson, and what we're talking about is taking away from the poor by courts and law enforcement for essentially courts and city coffers.
Right. That's what we've seen here in California. The system of issuing and processing citations creates severe inequality based on race and income because of the steep amount of the fines and the resulting license suspension if someone misses the initial deadline to pay their fines, which essentially traps someone in a cycle of poverty.
Disproportionately, African Americans, 70%, for example, in San Francisco, which has under 10% African American population. So this is really also based on high fines and failure to pay. And we're not just talking about people who are menacing the roads. We're talking about a broken taillight or a registration that is not proper or, for that matter, an identity theft where somebody is driving your car and you get blamed for it.
Right. And not only are we talking about non-moving violations, we're talking about violations that are unrelated to driving altogether. So tickets for littering, loitering, having an open container in public, all of those tickets, if you miss your deadline to appear in court or pay, can result in your driver's license being suspended.
And these are, in many instances, people who rely on their automobile for work, and so they're out of work, and we get into this terrible cycle of poverty.
That's exactly right. We have seen in a number of studies that having a license is directly correlated to having a job. One study out of New Jersey found that over 40% of people whose licenses were suspended lost their jobs as a result.
So we obviously need more accountability in the citations that are given, and we need more of an opportunity for people to have some kind of redress because in some instances they're being kept from having even a hearing or getting into court. This is not true in some counties. But counties have, state law can change, but also counties can do it because it's not a state law to suspend a license for failure to pay.
It's not required. The courts, upon a failure to appear or pay, can notify the DMV to suspend the license. And at that point, being able to get back into court in many counties is reliant on being able to post bail, which is in effect the full amount owed. And for someone, as you mentioned, who maybe didn't even commit the offense, they were a victim of identity theft, to be able to make that case to the judge, they first have to pay the full fine amount. And as we've already mentioned, it's extremely high.
So you're saying license suspension is the wrong tool, essentially. But what do we do about all those scofflaws and all those people who are driving who need fines levied on them to get them to straighten up and fly right, so to speak?
I think there can certainly be consequences, but the two most important things are that the fines not be so high that they're essentially stacking impossibility on top of each other, like multiple life sentences.
How high are we talking about?
We're talking about a $100 ticket going to $490 instantly under statutory penalties and assessments. And then if you miss your initial deadline to appear or pay, up to $815. And that's for one single violation. A ticket that you get at a traffic stop might have multiple violations. For example, tail light out and expired tags. That's two violations. So 815 for just one, it can vary much, can pile up very quickly.
Now, John Oliver even did a whole program on this about the $35 failure to stop at a stop sign in California with fees and penalties going up to $238. And this is not even to mention the cost that you have to pay, which I unfortunately had recently experienced if your car happens to get towed, if you are supposedly violating, you know, maybe park 1 inch in somebody's driveway. I know there are a lot of listener horror stories along those lines. But let me go to understanding what this is about. Either you pay or in some instances you don't even have a day in court. Why is that?
So a citation will indicate that your options are to appear in court or to pay the citation. And it's upon missing that initial obligation that you end up in this spiral that you can't get out of.
You don't pay the fine, you don't get your day in court.
At that point, if you go to court, so for example, we had a client who someone else got a ticket in his name. So, of course, that person didn't appear in court and the client didn't know about the hearing. So he learned about it much later when his license was suspended. He got the notice in the mail and he went to court to seek a court date to show that it was not his ticket. But in order to get a court date, he needed to post the bail or the full amount owed in order so that a judge would actually hear his case.
We're talking with Meredith Desitel, and she is staff attorney for the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights of the San Francisco Bay Area, lead author of the report, Not Just a Ferguson Problem, How Traffic Courts Drive Inequality in California. And again, you can find that report on our website at kqed.org/forum. It was just put out yesterday. Now, John Avalos, San Francisco supervisor, put out this morning, has been talking about doing something about this. Senator Robert Hertzberg, state senator from Van Nuys, Democrat, has been talking about legislation. We've got Governor Brown talking about amnesty and so forth. What's actually in the hopper here likely to ameliorate this problem?
Well, we think there are things that can be done locally at the county level, and we are working with Supervisor Avalos' office as well as a number of other community allies. But ultimately, we see this as a systemic problem that requires state-level policy change, and we're also working with our allies to support Senator Hertzberg's efforts. And in fact, we've been working on state legislation for the past 2 years, and we've seen those bills garner bipartisan support in policy committee and be defeated in the appropriations committees. And so what we're hoping to do through this report is to lift this issue up as, really a public crisis, a matter of social and civil rights, and make that systemic reform possible.
Well, there's a lot of money at stake. But Karen Martin, let me bring you into this discussion to talk about the hidden costs of this, not only to families, but to the economy.
Right. So one of the biggest problems is that it's very difficult to actually get a firm estimate of what it's costing us to have this very complex and nationwide system. So if you consider the cost of not just assessing the fines, fees, surcharges, restitution, but then collecting them, administrating them, enforcing them, it quickly balloons to the point where thinking that we're getting revenue from this is actually not quite true. You know, if you consider, like, the report mentions the cost of a day in jail in San Francisco is $173. So if somebody owes a few hundred dollars and you put them in jail for a week, you quickly are costing the taxpayers and the state more than you could ever hope to recoup from the person.
Well, that's not only to mention if somebody can't work because they don't have an automobile, they may have to go on family assistance and the bills go to the taxpayer.
Yeah, and, you know, people have families, right? So they're driving their kids to school. Now all of a sudden they can't. They're taking care of elderly family members, and they can't. They can't grocery shop, at least not legally. It goes on and on and on.
There was a story in this report. In fact, it was really quite poignant about a father who wanted to take his son to – the son had leukemia, wanted to take him for treatment, and had to go on the bus and was concerned about the son being exposed to all of the kinds of things that one can be exposed to on municipal transportation. And so we have, you know, a great deal of impact here that comes into the picture. And you mentioned nationally. There is a pilot program, though, in Spokane. Can you speak to that?
There are, yeah, so the pilot program in Washington, well, there's a few, and the idea is that you have things like amnesty days, right, or you have make it so that people can actually negotiate how much they're paying, and we've seen this kind of innovation nationwide, and I think that it's actually critical because if you think about, you know, the effect on people's families is not just the things they can't do. It's also that the families themselves end up paying this debt, directly paying for people's debt. They also are paying, you know, housing, transportation, food, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, but as I understand, the Spokane program is a countywide relicensing program. They consolidate tickets and they actually allow residents to have a flexible payment program.
Yeah, sorry, I'm not aware of those details.
Well, but there are also counties. I mean, here in California, in Northern California, where we're broadcasting from, in Contra Costa County and Alameda County, there are programs that involve community service options and, well, forgiving of debt, even in some instances, or lessen the pay and determine the fines on the ability to pay, that sort of thing. In fact, let me bring Judge Deborah Ryan into this. Certainly this is true in other counties, Judge Ryan. I don't know what it's like in Santa Clara, but there are other systems in this rather strong two-tiered revenue-sucking system that we're talking about.
Yes, and in Santa Clara County, I think all judicial officers recognize how important it is to view each person as an individual. I agree that you know, poverty is tragic, and as a society, we have a moral obligation to examine things that keep people in this vicious cycle. And I think it is true that not coming to court is what drives, unfortunately, a lot of the system. Because if you fail to come to court, then in the old days, a warrant would issue for your arrest, and you'd be in custody. Now, under you know, state law, you're able to impose civil assessments instead, which add money to your debt before you can get back to court at times. But I know in our county, if we had a situation like the identity theft, that is not always just has to be resolved by someone paying their fees and coming to court, but you can write to the judicial officers. I had several occasions while I was doing traffic, maybe more than several, where those were brought to my attention, and I took care of them.
This is, however, a pretty chaotic system. I mean, it goes county to county, courthouse to courthouse. It goes state to state. But I'm just wondering, since you, I know, are a former commissioner and yeah, served as a commissioner for a number of years, the vast majority of traffic matters are actually handled by commissioners or temporary judges. And what is up to the discretion of the judge?
Well, the fines can be in some cases. Some of the fines are set by the legislature. There are some situations where the fine is set that may not be adjusted in any way. There are several like that, particularly weight violations for big rig trucks and things of that nature. But otherwise, there is a system set out in the code that allows for traffic tickets for a first offense to be from $0 to $100, second offense up to $200, third offense up to $250. So there is some discretion within there. But again, the legislature has also set certain fines for certain types of offenses, such as red light violations.
But commissioners have, I understand, less discretion. They are employees of the court, but the judge has a level of discretion beyond the
commissioners are judicial officers, and when they sit in traffic court, they have full judicial discretion and exercise it on a regular basis.
And from your experience, can you talk a bit about how these traffic fines play a role in ordinary people's lives?
I think I haven't had a chance to read the report, as I understand it just came out this morning, but from the situation that you described just now, I'm sure that those kinds of situations happen. And it is sad, it's tragic, and I think when people do come to court, then that gives the judicial officer the ability to listen to that individual's case and try to make an appropriate disposition.
Judge Deborah Ryan is with us from San Jose, and she's a judge in the Santa Clara County Superior Court. Karen Martin, the report talks about ending license suspensions as a collection tool. It talks about full access to courts, but it also talks about lessening fees and determining fines on the ability to pay. Would that make sense in a singular way throughout the nation to reform things to be more responsive to the kind of problems that are outlined in the report?
Yes, I would actually say it's essential, and we have plenty of precedent for tailoring punishment to both the severity of the offense and to people's ability to pay. You know, in Europe, we have there's a day fine system, which explicitly takes into account the severity of the offense and a person's ability to pay. And we actually tried this a few years ago in the 90s in the U.S. to try to have pilot programs that tried this, right? And so it's actually very easy, or at least straightforward, to set up a schedule that takes into account what somebody earns. And I think critically important is the fact that we should not be insisting that people who are indigent pay. Essentially, if they are indigent, they have no income, it does not make sense to try to enforce especially outrageously large fines on them.
Well, Judge Ryan, let me go back to a couple of courts, counties, I should say, that I alluded to before. In Alameda County, license suspension will not take place if individuals actually show they need the car for work and they can work out a payment plan. In Contra Costa, the judges will hear cases of low-income people who have essentially accrued court-related debt. These seem to make sense, at least in a broader way, and why not institute them, for that matter, all over the place?
I do think it's up to the individual counties, but as you indicate, there is certainly merit to that, and I do think that people have to be looked at on an individual basis, their situations. I think the crucial thing, though, that we have to get back to is if people do show up in court, that provides the judicial officer with the opportunity to exercise that discretion that they have.
Can you allow for community service or payment plans in Santa Clara?
Absolutely.
So
you do.
You have that discretion.
Yes.
Do you also have the discretion to essentially reinstate the license if the person is in need of the license for work?
Once the matter is reported to the DMV and the DMV takes action against the license, then it really is up to the DMV. It's not with the court anymore to be able to return the license. Now, in the cases I'm doing now, which are criminal cases, there are some instances where you have some more discretion depending upon the circumstances, but not for traffic violations.
And Meredith Settle, you are also, that is your group, the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights in the San Francisco Bay Area, is talking about not only payment plans and community service options or plans along those lines, but forgiving debt, amnesty.
We would like to see that opportunity for people who have their licenses suspended to be able to make their case, as Judge Ryan said, show on an individual basis, their inability to pay or other reasons in the interest of justice that their debt should be forgiven. And it's important because Judge Ryan mentions that there are options if you do appear in court. If you miss that court deadline, there are essentially no options. Payment in full essentially becomes your only option. And it's so self-defeating at that point to take away someone's driver's license because that prevents them from ever being able to pay, and it just creates a vicious cycle. So we'd like to see suspensions ended as a tool for debt collection.
All right. Let me bring on another voice here. Thaddeus Ford is a client of the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights of the San Francisco Bay Area. Recently had his license reinstated. Mr. Ford, good to have you with us. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Well, for congratulations on getting your license back, can you kind of outline for us or give us a brief summary of your story and why your license was taken away and how long it took you to get it back or what you needed to do to get it back?
Well, it all started. I had sold a car that never got out of my name, so they had parking tickets. So that was like $1,400 before I even found out about it. I was driving somebody else's car. I got pulled over and found out my license was suspended. So they took that car and they just gave me tickets. So after that, I couldn't pay. I lost my job because I didn't have a license, you know. So they didn't give me any options but to keep trying. So I became homeless after that also, you know. Not able to pay rent because I couldn't work, stuff like that, you know. So it got pretty rough on me. So I heard about the civil rights lawyers, and I went down there, and Stephanie and Dana jumped right on it. They really helped me a lot. They went to court with me also and got a ride in a bus without a transfer ticket that was $708 dismissed for me. That helped a lot. And they got in touch with the people that had my loan that was collecting on it, and now I pay $25 a month. Got my license back yesterday. It was supposed to be a one-time deal. That's all I needed. All along was a one-time shot to do something.
Well, I'm certainly pleased that you got your license back, and congratulations. But this was a six-year fight we're talking about, was it not?
Yes, it was. It was, man, I went to court. I went to the judges first, and they told me nothing they can do because a collection agency has it now. They couldn't help me, so I tried to deal with the collection agency on my own. They wanted this big lump sum of money that I couldn't give, and I never would have got my license back if it hadn't been for civil rights lawyers. I never would have got it.
Yeah, the collection agencies do manage to get their way into this, and that involves even more costs. And Thaddeus Ford, I hope you continue to drive and drive safely, and I appreciate your joining us. And you, our listeners, can join us. In fact, let me take this moment to few seconds to invite you. I know many of you have concerns and stories of your own. Traffic fines disproportionately hurting California's poor. We're talking about big numbers here and certainly big dollars as well. And if you'd like to join the conversation, if you have a story to tell, always remind you to keep it cogent, but please feel free to be part of the program. You can do that by calling our toll-free number, which is available to you. It's 866-733-6786, and that'll work if you're listening to us on radio, internet, or Sirius satellite. Again, for your phone calls, 866-733-6786, if you have questions or comments. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or post questions or comments onto our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on the segment, and you can also, of course, tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQED Forum. Judge Deborah Ryan joined us for this first half hour. She's a judge at Santa Clara County Superior Court. We're going to bid her adieu, and with many thanks, Judge Ryan. Pleased to have had you.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Also, want to say that Karen Martin will be with us, Assistant Professor of Public Management at John Jay College of Criminal Justice, who has, of course, been studying this on a national level, and Meredith Desitel, who is Staff Attorney with the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights, a lead author of the report. The report, again, is called Not Just a Ferguson Problem, How Traffic Courts Drive Inequality in California. You can go to our website and download it or read it, kqed.org/forum. And when we return, we'll hear from you. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Yesterday, the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights of the San Francisco Bay Area released a report titled Not Just the Ferguson Problem, and it's all about how high traffic fines and license suspensions are disproportionately hurting California's poor and minorities, and how courts throughout the state provide limited due process and really dramatically affect economic inequality. Meredith Desitel is with us. She's a staff attorney and lead author of the report. And by the way, there were other, of course, legal and civil rights groups who have found the same kinds of problems and issued reports on this. Karen Martin's with us by phone from upstate New York. She's with the John Jay College of Criminal Justice. And we're going to go with your phone calls first and remind you, you can not only join us by phone, but also email us forum@kqed.org or go to our website, kqed.org/forum. Let's bring in our first caller, and that's Cody. Good morning.
Good morning, Michael. Thank you for having me.
Glad to have you.
Hi. I wanted to call in and make a comment. I was in construction for many years of my life. I still am to this day. And during the housing collapse with the bubble burst, I lost my job, and I wasn't able to stay ahead of the game, so to speak. And one of the things that suffered is I wasn't able to keep up with my child support payment. And because of that, my license got suspended. And when I did get work again, I had to fight through the court system to get my license unsuspended and then go through the process of the DMV. And what ended up happening is due to the cyclical nature of construction and it being seasonal, I often lost employment and thus wasn't able to keep up on my payments and suffered many times. I lost my license over a dozen times just not being employed, trying to make ends meet. And even when I would try and compensate by spending more time with my child, my license was suspended. I wasn't able to go pick her up, and it affected everything I did, and it really drove down my self-esteem quite a bit.
Well, I'm sorry that you went through that, and Karen Martin, we're talking about a story that's not unusual here. I should mention that there was a story, in fact, earlier on this morning's National Public Radio broadcast about license suspensions in Montana now. I guess it's passed for failure to pay on student debt. Again, this brings up with Cody, it was child support payments. There's a pretty broad range of things that people get their license suspended for, and they are on a whole continuum of, things that are, from most people's minds, not to be taken all that seriously to some pretty serious offenses.
Right, and you definitely see it across a wide variety. And, the caller mentioned child support, and that is a massive issue. Suspending driver's license is kind of the go-to sanction for failing to pay or for having arrears or for missing payments in a variety of situations, so from court costs to fines and fees to restitution to child support. It's kind of like the thing that people, that institutions see as the easy thing to do. It's seen as punitive. It's seen as cost-free, at least to the state, at least in the short term. And so it's become very ubiquitous nationwide.
And let me thank Cody for his call. And you want to say something here, Meredith Desitel?
I'll say I'm not surprised to hear about the employment consequences. That's the exact same trend that we observe. Our report does focus on the court-ordered fines and fees and failure to pay on infractions. And I think it's worth mentioning that our estimate of 4 million suspended licenses is just for failure to appear or pay on infraction fines.
That's one in six Californians, right?
One in six licenses, as best as we could estimate.
Let me get another caller. We go to San Mateo. Sam, welcome. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I've spent a lot of time in traffic court fighting various of my own tickets, and I think, one of the big problems is that most people aren't aware of their rights, and the courts do very little to advise them of their rights. These are really kangaroo courts in some sense. And I think that, we could go a long way towards helping people get proper representation and understanding their rights.
Meredith, want to comment on that?
Sure. I agree. For the most part, people don't have representation in these courts. In fact, most of these offenses are infractions, and there's no right to appointed counsel if you can't afford it. And much of the burden is on the individual to be able to ask for certain remedies or relief. As a legal aid organization similar to Bay Area Legal Aid, East Bay Community Law Center, our partners in this work, we have limited capacity and can represent only a small fraction of the people that need the advice that the caller's talking about.
And we're talking for the most part about poor people, Karen Martin, who can't certainly afford counsel unless they get the counsel pro bono or they get from some legal poverty organization, right?
Right. And we're not, yes, poor people are disproportionately represented in the criminal justice system at every stage. And I'd also say that in addition to people not having representation, the actual system of these criminal justice financial obligations is extraordinarily complex. The report details how you move from $100 to $490, and this is also something we see nationwide, is that you'll start with a base fine, and for every $10 in a base fine, there's another $10 in penalty assessment, and then the court can levy an additional $7, and there's another 20%. And so not only is it difficult to have representation, but it's difficult to even know what you owe. And a lot of people are facing debt from a variety of sources. So it's not just the court. It's also child support. It's also the DMV. It's also, for a lot of people, probation or parole, and so they have all of this incoming collections, but it can be very confusing to know who owes what and how far in arrears you are and what's going to happen to you if you don't pay.
Well, we're talking also about, for example, fines up to close to $500 for a broken taillight or a misplaced registration. And for some people, Mayor Desitel, it means they have to choose between food and paying their traffic fines, literally.
That's right. We see that, and we see people having to fall back on social safety nets to meet those basic needs. And as we were talking about before, that's an example of where the true costs of these systems are really not being acknowledged, or, it's something that's we consider kind of a hidden cost.
Well, here's a listener, Michael, who writes, and let me go to both of you on this. This panel is sorely missing the perspective of the other end of the issue, traffic safety. Driving is a privilege, not a constitutional right. And in most cases, people lose their licenses because they are endangering the lives of everyone else on our streets. 35,000 or more traffic fatalities every year is a justice issue, too. And certainly we would agree with that. And you would say what, though, Karen Martin?
I would say that that is true, that there's obviously an issue with public safety. However, so many people are getting caught up in the system for offenses that have nothing to do with public safety, number one. And number two, that there are plenty of mechanisms in place that if somebody actually inflicts injury or takes a life, that is, a criminal concern. And this issue is, plays a role in criminal courts, but it's largely separate. So I'd say that is an perfectly reasonable thing to say. However, that there's a whole other situation happening with debt related to infractions that have nothing to do with public safety.
Well, let me give you some more pushback from our listeners. And Meredith Desitel, let me go to you with this. Marv writes, let me get this correct. A person who can't afford a $100 ticket is driving on the freeways with me. Fact, a car going 70 miles per hour is going 100 feet per second. If you can't come up with $100 for a ticket, how well do you think they are doing their car maintenance?
Where I would start is these citations are, as already mentioned, are not all driving-related citations. They're citations for failing to have registration. They're citations for failing to pay muni fare, so not related to driver safety. And I think having an unlicensed driver is actually undermining public safety, causing police and other law enforcement resources to be devoted to enforcing these failures to appear or pay, as opposed to focusing on real things like driver safety. And I'll give a good example of the disconnect here. So specifically, we're talking about only suspensions for failures to appear or pay. We're not talking about suspensions for things like driving under the influence offense. And it's worth knowing that if you have a DUI, the law actually permits you to go to court and ask for a restricted license that allows you to drive to work. There's no similar restricted license option for someone whose license has been suspended for a failure to appear or pay on a jaywalking ticket.
Caller's got a point, though. Cars are expensive. I mean, maintenance of cars are expensive. And the point seems to be if you don't have $100 to pay a fine, you're not necessarily going to take care of your car or be able to tender to the needs of your car.
Well, we see licenses is not only about driving on the highway, but about being able to access jobs. So you need a driver's license to drive the parks and recreation vehicle and to be hired for that job. So what we observe is that where you want someone to pay their license or pay their fines, they need to be able to access their license to be able to drive for work. Otherwise, it's self-defeating.
Now, Karen Martin, let me get your thoughts here.
Yeah, I would just say that it's perfectly reasonable public policy to be concerned with people having safe cars and being well-trained to drive, but that is a completely separate issue, and we do need policy that supports people being good drivers and having safe cars, but this is not the way to achieve that end, and so we need to be really clear about what the trade-offs are. If you're directly undermining somebody's ability to be a safe driver and to have a safe car by taking away their ability to drive legally and earn income, then that is a conflict in and of itself.
Well, we are, as I said, getting some pushback here. Another listener writes, no one receives a fine unless they commit a crime, and no one has a right to the privilege of driving. If you don't want to be responsible for your crimes, then follow the law. If anything, these fines are way too low, and the level of enforcement is way too lax. Another listener writes, a poor person who texts and drives should be paying the same in court fines and fees as a wealthy person and not getting any special treatment, especially as his or her conduct poses the same risks to the rest of the public as a well-off texting driver, considering that a serial traffic violator who is poor is also not likely to have adequate auto insurance in the event of a serious accident. Does it really amount to a deprivation of civil rights for such a person's driving privileges to be suspended? Meredith?
Yeah, I can understand
Karen
that.
Karen Martin, go ahead.
sorry, I can understand that sentiment. The issue is that it's very easy to stop the thought process immediately at the fine. What you have to consider are the consequences of this debt. It does not stop with just somebody did something wrong, let's punish them with a fine. You have to consider what happens with that debt that lingers and lingers and lingers and affects so many other realms of life and affects so many other realms of public safety, right? And affects so many other realms of things that taxpayers end up paying for. So it is extremely easy and it makes sense to say you did something wrong, let's charge you a fine, but it is extremely short-sighted.
Again, Karen Martin is Assistant Professor of Public Management with the John Jay College of Criminal Justice. A number of listeners are suggesting income-based fines. And here Shauna writes, they should set a progressive tiered system for traffic fines. There's no reason the traffic violations, the least offensive of all lawbreaking, should have such a negative effect on certain segments of the population. Let me bring in more of your calls. Arito, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Hi.
What I haven't heard anybody bring up yet, and I'm not sure if the report talked about it, was the idea of doing community service in instead of or as an alternative to a fine. I find myself sitting in front of the judge in here in California and had a fine of $2,500 and even told the judge that I might as well do some jail time because I can't pay that. And the amount of jail time equated to about 30 days in the county jail. I figured that would be a detriment, too. So I think one of the callers said it before that, or somebody said it before, that you have to actually know that you can potentially even do community service. So a lot of times, you know, the whole process of, you know, being in front of the judges, you know, for some people it's the first time they've ever been in the courtroom. It was kind of intimidating. You just want to get out of there. So, you know, I brought it up, and
well, we did mention community service on a couple of occasions. You might not have heard, but you bring up an important point. And Mayor Desitel, in terms of being, again, people appearing in court, being informed of what their options are. I mean, when community service is available, people should know that. Right?
Right. They should know it, and the system should be meaningful. So we fully support alternatives to payment like community service. It gives an option for low-income people to meet these obligations. But by meaningful, I'm referring to the rate at which people are credited for their community service hours. We're seeing in some counties it's below minimum wage. It's not always accessible for people who are perhaps seniors or have disabilities. And it's not always able to be applied to the full fine amount. I know that East Bay Community Law Center had a client where he completed the community service on the ticket, but was told that the $300 civil assessment could not be satisfied through community service. That had to be paid lump sum.
And let me ask the caller again. Ayerto, have you actually done community service? Yeah.
Yes, I have. I did it through San Francisco Project 20 here at Project Rebound at San Francisco State University. And it took me about a good almost, I had to get the time extended because I was actually working also at the same time. But I did it here at the Juvenile in San Francisco and went in and volunteered my weekend, Saturday morning, to go speak with the young folks. But, so I have done it. I have done the community service through Project 20.
Well, I'm glad you called, and I thank you for your call. And let me go to a couple more online comments. A listener writes, the state and counties, because the word taxes is so verboten, have decided to use fees tacked on to fines as a way to increase revenue. This does seem like a form of corruption. This is a vicious cycle. We need a more rational model for tax collection and paying for services and infrastructure. And along those lines, Red from Sacramento writes, the core problem is that non-threatening traffic infractions and violations are managed within the criminal system of law at all. The obvious temptation is to attach the process to revenue generation, can only lead to the corruption of the process and incentivize the making of horror stories. Such matters as minor violations, their costs and penalties should be entirely removed from our legal system and managed as we do things like code enforcement, torts, business practices and such, for which people are billed and collections are made without the engagement of police who specialize in the job of dealing with serious crime and violence. I think that's a worthy point, Karen Martin. Let's hear from you on that. I mean, it takes away from police enforcement, certainly.
Yeah, it's an excellent point. And actually, the Department of Justice recently found that in Ferguson that there is pretty much collusion between the branches of government. You know, the city manager was writing to the chief of police saying, you essentially need to produce more traffic tickets so that we can have more revenue. That, to me, sounds like corruption. It certainly sounds like a corrupting of the kind of philosophy on which our criminal justice system and even our democracy is built. So
and there's someone, who paid through the nose on a car being towed fairly recently. First time I experienced that traumatic event, which it is. I can tell you that, suspicions are aroused in my mind about working together in terms of making sure that people were towed and getting parking tickets.
Right. And, and that really undermines trust in the system and trust in police. And what we need to have a functioning democracy is for people to actually trust the institutions, trust that, that laws are being followed by not just the people, regular people, but by people who are actually running the institutions. And when you have a system that's set up so that the courts, the city manager, the police are all working in cahoots to maximize revenue, that has to undermine what people make of the systems that they're participating in.
Meredith Desitel, listener Regina, writes, police departments regularly target the same individual persons and give traffic and parking tickets to them. It's harassment. Do you have any data on that? Can you corroborate that?
We do have some data that we speak about in the report. In 2010, reports documented that following the recession, citations went up in San Francisco. So we see this direct tie to revenue generation. And then specifically around disparate racial enforcement, there is evidence. We had data out of a few cities in California showing that African Americans and Latinos were disproportionately stopped. And here in San Francisco, the Lawyers Committee, we have a clinic where over 70% of our clients dealing with suspended driver's licenses are African American.
Well, here's a listener who writes, well, I'm sure some situations occur where people didn't know they had tickets. I think a root problem here is not dealing with the problem up front, either due to denial or thinking you can get away with it, not understanding the consequences. Improved communication is required to minority groups in addition to appropriate income-based fines. And another listener, Rick, says, do we have any reasonable expectation that habitual violators of minor traffic regulations will demonstrate respect for the rule of law if we alter the system to make it less financially punitive? I don't know, Meredith or Karen, if you want to answer that.
Well, I think one of the keys to punishment is that you want it to be proportional and you want it to actually be able to come to an end. And part of the problems with using money is that it goes on and on and on and it doesn't actually stop. So I think it's a valid question to wonder what the actual punitive effect is in terms of deterring people from having future infractions. And I think the answer to that, it needs to be an empiric. So we need to actually experiment with, additional community service or people sitting in jail, which I think might be an unconscionable choice to ask people to sit, give up their liberty instead of their money, but it's worth exploring if that's the concern, or tailoring the amount of the fine to somebody's income. But I think those are all valid questions, and unfortunately, we don't actually have the empirics that we need to give a really good answer.
And another email I want to read from Dan, who writes, the report says that a $100 ticket automatically becomes $400 plus because of statutory add-ons. Is this the case in all California counties? Well, it's not really. I think we've determined that, haven't we, Meredith?
Well, the statutory add-ons are state law, and so those are automatic penalties.
Everywhere. Well, Dan goes on to write, I doubt that local city councils understand this total cost when considering the advisability of installing red light cameras in their cities. I wonder whether legislators at any level are aware of this base issue, let alone the even more serious license suspension issue. I don't know if we can necessarily clock the awareness of legislators, but as I said earlier, Robert Hertzberg of Van Nuys has written a piece of legislation, and let me go to more of your phone calls. We'll go to Castro Valley next. Michael, thanks for waiting. You're on.
Thanks for taking my call. Is there really any question that the system that's in place now is not designed to create better, safer drivers? It's simply punitive. And as you mentioned before, to generate income for local governments, police, I think that, if you think about what happens when you get pulled over for an infraction, and how do the police approach you? It isn't as if their intention is to enlighten you, as well as punish you. It's simply to punish you. I think we need to kind of go back and try to find a way to make people more aware of their driving and not to make them feel like you're a bad person because you broke the law, but maybe you just need to be made more aware of what you did. You understand what I mean?
Yeah. You're talking again about the importance of education, and certainly a number of listeners have made that point, and it's an emphatic point, and I thank you for reiterating it. I want to get another caller on from Oakland. Agnes, you're on. Good morning.
Oh, good morning. My biggest problem is not being allowed to see the judge. I'm a disabled senior. I had a $30 fix-it ticket I never saw, which triggered a 2-year suspension on my license and a $2,500 fine, and I've been unable to drive my car and trying to get into the court, and they won't allow it. So it's a catch-22 for a lot of people.
Catch-22 comes to mind in many instances. Meredith, is that any thoughts for Agnes about what she can do or how she can expedite?
This is the exact scenario that we're seeing day in and day out with very few solutions. As our client Thaddeus Ford mentioned earlier in the session, we are working with Bay Area Legal Aid and the San Francisco Superior Court on a very tailored program to try to help folks get their licenses back. It's been a multi-year process, and we've achieved license reinstatement for about 6 clients. So I would say that the current solutions are nowhere meeting the scale of the problem.
Agnes, thank you for sharing your story, and good luck to you. And I want to get to more callers in a moment, but here's a tweet from Brian, kind of an aside, but he says, the fine for riding bicycles without a helmet in the Mid-Peninsula open space is $259, and then goes on to say a pure attempt to pay rangers. We'll go to more of your calls. We'll go next to San Jose. Mark, welcome.
Thank you. I wanted to synthesize a couple of things that people said already. One is that the Superior Court is really being used in California for ways it wasn't really intended. And this flood of all this traffic stuff is because, to a large extent, you know, people go to a judge. If they didn't pay it, they don't show up. So they get a judgment against themselves, and then they don't know how to handle this. And if they had gone to some kind of system where they had an advocate, like a clerk of the court, that could help them in a non-judicial role with another person, work through this, I think that would make a lot more sense. And it would end up with people resolving these issues and not just, you know, some people that are wealthier just pay the ticket, even though they may or may not have been guilty. And I think a lot of the comments you're getting from people that they should just pay, and they shouldn't have a right to have a car if they can't pay for their tickets. I think that's really short-sighted.
Okay.
And, you know, we have the same problem with, you know, the Superior Court has got the same problem with debt collection as well. I just recently got sued for a debt I paid off, and it was over 4 years old, and I still had to get a lawyer to defend myself in court.
Okay. I appreciate your call, Mark. Karen Martin, reaction to Mark's call?
Yeah, that is something that I have encountered in my own data collection, is that people, you know, one person told me about debt that they owed from 1992 that they're still paying off. So I think that it's this problem that the punishment never ends. If you think that it is a good punishment, then you need to also think that the punishment should come to a conclusion at some point. And unfortunately, our system doesn't actually allow that to happen.
All right. I thank Mark for his call. And let me get Peter on here. Peter, thanks for waiting. Join us.
Yes, hi. All of these 6 fines, if we're worried about justice or deterrence, we should think about the wealthier people or the rich people for whom these things are simply a nuisance and for whom it's no deterrence at all. So I think any fixed fine is like a regressive tax, and there should be consideration of having everybody, in a sense, pay equally, for example, through a day's worth of time for community service.
Well, if you go and fight a ticket, it could be a day's worth of time, too. But, Peter, I appreciate your call. And, Meredith Desitil, we've said that your report could be read online, but what would you like our listeners particularly to take away from this report?
I think we'd like to focus on the solutions at the Lawyers Committee, and together with our partners, we think there are a number of things that can be done to start to dismantle this system that's having a disproportionate impact on people of color and people who are low income, beginning with ending the use of license suspensions as a means of collecting court-ordered debt and making this retroactive so that people who have their licenses suspended can get back to work and actually satisfy those obligations.
And Karen Martin, we've had a lot of pushback from listeners. Fortunately, we always like that to hear both sides. But you would agree with the conclusions you just heard from Meredith Desitil?
I would. And I would just reemphasize what the last caller said, that I think that there's a lot to be said for day fines or some other way of scaling ability to pay to the offense.
Okay. Let me thank you both. Again, Karen Martin is Assistant Professor of Public Management at John Jay College of Criminal Justice. She joined us from upstate New York this morning. Thank you for being with us, Professor Martin.
Thank you. My pleasure.
And thank you, Meredith Desitil, who is here in Studio with us, staff attorney with the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights of the San Francisco Bay Area and a lead author of the report. Again, the report is on our website, kqed.org/forum. It's called Not Just a Ferguson Problem, How Traffic Courts Drive Inequality in California. Thank you, Meredith.
Thanks for having me.
Our thanks also to Judge Deborah Ryan, who joined us this hour as well, a judge with the Santa Clara County Superior Court, and Thaddeus Ford, who is a client of the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights, who recently had his license reinstated after 6 years. We're here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, with an hour repeat at 10 to 11 in the evening. And let me tell you what's coming up in the hour ahead. We're going to talk about Rwanda. And, of course, as many of you know, there was a terrible genocide there in 1994, about 1 million people killed roughly in 100 days. And we're going to have the ambassador with us, as well as Philip Gurevich and a number of others, talking about what's happened with Rwanda now and what is going on and what is likely to happen in the future. They've tried to really, in many respects, resurrect the country like the phoenix, you know, come out of the ashes. Much to talk about there, and I hope you will join us for that. Remind you, you can always let us know what you think about what you hear on Forum or would like to hear by emailing us, forum@kqed.org. And Forum is produced by Judy Campbell, Irene Noguchi, Tina Lauberg. Our engagement producer is Amanda Stupai. Our engineer today is Howard Gelman, and our senior editor is Dan Zoll. And for all of us here at KQED, I'm Michael Krasnick.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schremm and Maria Minetti Schremm, founders of Clos Pegas Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.